Welcome to Red Inca. I'm Jared Kimber.
This episode of Red Inca, we talk about how India won the last World Cup with a man who was just playing with numbers.
I'm Himanesh Ganju. I'm a cosmologist and I'm the former analyst of the Indian men's cricket team.
We talk about Akshar Patel, cosmology, Hawkeye data, Rahul Dravid, R. Ashwin, Rohit Sharma, losing a World Cup and then winning one.
That's quite a name drop. I like that. Or quite a job drop, I should say. But I'm going to start you somewhere else. I want to know what your first ever memory of Akshar Patel, the cricketer, is.
That's hard to sort of jog back, but...
That's why I asked.
Yeah, because we've come a full circle and we are now recording this. The last time I was on this podcast was when I wrote about Akshar Patel and that... podcast and that video reached Rahul Dravid and that's when he contacted me.
I just told you before we started to not go too far ahead and look at you going too far ahead. Akshar Patel, when was the first time, do you have any early memories of him as a cricketer or, you
nothing
know,
that,
he's not, I mean, he's a good cricketer, but he's not like one of those cricketers you fixate over normally.
Nothing that stood out early on. I remember thinking early on that he was something like Jadeja, you know, someone who darts the ball. It was only after I looked at the data when I found out that he's really different and really anomalous. But yeah, nothing standing out, just another darter, you know, like left-arm darter, like Jadeja.
So did you, is that when you get obsessed with him, when you start looking at the actual data and what the data says? So it's not as if you were like, he's taking a lot of wickets, I need to work out why. It was more you were looking at bowlers in general and then you noticed something.
No, this was after the England series in 2021. And when you watch him, you see that he bowls very wide of the crease and he doesn't turn the ball at all. So the question in my head was, what was this guy doing differently and why was he getting wickets? And that's where I started looking at the data.
And so do you, how long does a piece like that take? Was it one of those ones where it just all falls together very simply, or, you know, did you run it by other people, or how did you sort of come across it?
So usually when I write a piece for Crick Info, it is something which, you know, like coalesces over a period of time, maybe a few weeks when I'm thinking about. So you start with a cricketing question, right? And then you sort of start thinking about how to formulate it in terms of numbers and what kind of metrics can you build to sort of investigate that question that you have. And once you do that, once you write the code and you do that, after that, you want to look at the data and try not, you know, like see if you can find arcs that you could put into stories, right? And so that takes about, let's say, 3 to 4 weeks from conception to the full article. The writing itself takes maybe a day, because once you have everything set in your mind and you've done the code and the numbers, you can write fast. But the Akshar Patel article, I think it took 2 or 3 weeks from conception to writing, because the data had a lot of anomalous things going on and it was easy to sort of construct a narrative out of it.
How you've written a few pieces for Crick Info. How big was that piece compared to others that you've written?
So that piece didn't go on Crick Info.
Oh, okay. I couldn't remember. When you said Crick Info before, I was like, I didn't think it was on Crick Info.
So that piece didn't go on Crick Info, but it, so because we were not sure of whether we should be using Hawkeye data for a piece of Crick Info. And so I put it on my Substack, and this was before Substack was throttled on Twitter. And it got a lot of views. I think it got like 300-400 likes on Twitter, which is huge.
Yep.
I might be misquoting that number, but somewhere in the ballpark. And so that was big, you know.
Was that, and did, that did it feel like the biggest piece you'd written at that point?
In terms of numbers, maybe yes.
Yeah.
Because I think I'm most proud of two pieces I've written. One is the first piece I wrote for Crick Info, which was on the inbox. It's not on the main features page. And it was applying survival analysis to test match batting. And not a lot of people have read that piece, but I'm very proud of it. And the other piece I'm proud of is the piece I wrote on boundary hitting in T20. So in terms of sort of satisfaction, those two pieces were better. But in terms of numbers, I think the Akshar piece caught the most eyeballs.
Do you know if Akshar read the piece?
I don't think he has.
Okay.
I don't think he has. I remember asking people.
My next question is,
you
said in the intro, you go on to be the Indian analyst, of course. Does he know that he's the reason that you got into this?
I don't think so. I've seen him. I've not like talked to him.
Mm.
I don't think he knows this whole story.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's really
I don't think he knows that I was the analyst. Like
You were the invisible analyst. We'll get into that part later.
The shadow analyst.
Yeah, yeah.
As I like to call it. Yeah.
I want a little bit more backstory on you. Did you play cricket yourself?
No. But we used to play a lot of cricket in school, right? So every birthday party, every break, every recess was cricket.
Yeah.
No matter where we were, whether we had a bat or ball or not, it was all cricket. So we watched a lot of cricket. We played a lot of cricket. Never formally played at all.
And why did you go, or what got you into cricket data? Because you said before, was it cosmologist you said was your actual? Yeah. I'm not going to ask you about that. but how did the cricket data and everything sort of start?
I remember I was kind of jobless in 2015, and I was doing nothing with my life. I was waiting to apply to grad school. And I had a few questions about basic stuff, like, you know, how have batting averages changed over time in test cricket, things like these, right? And I didn't have the data for it. So what I did was I found a couple of databases on Reddit, but the guy who was maintaining them no longer maintained them at that time. So I decided to learn them on my own. And that's where I learned Python, and I learned how to gather a database from various sources and got to work on those. So, yeah.
And when you're starting out, like, I can't even remember the first time that I kind of came across you, but you must have been posting on places like Reddit and, you know, on Twitter.
It was on Reddit, and I remember that you told me to keep writing or something like that. Like, yeah.
Did I?
You were very kind and very, very nice to me. Yeah. This was back in 2016, I think. 2016, 17.
Oh, tell me about it. Did you contact me or did I come across one of your things?
I think it was one of those AMAs when I asked you a question, and I guess you might have seen a couple of my posts.
Oh, okay.
And then we got in touch, and I think over DMs I talked to you. I don't remember exactly, but yeah. Yeah, it was something like that. Yeah.
Well, I don't remember that at all. I kind of just remember you, like, occasionally a piece coming up. And because around that same period, there was you, there was Joe Harris, obviously Dan Weston, I would put him in there.
Yeah.
Freddie starts doing more stuff. And then obviously the other Crickfest guys occasionally. Yeah. And there's a few others as well that, you know, some have.
There was Jonas as well.
There was Jonas, of course. So Jonas.
Yeah.
Jonas is 2018 because he contacted me after something I'd done with Trent Woodhill, and he contacted both of us. I remember that really clearly. And it was really something that I was interested in, but it wasn't something that, like, I didn't even know at Crick Info at that stage I could have had access to the ball-by-ball data. Like, could you imagine? I'd been working with them since 2011 and didn't know that there was like a ball-by-ball database that I could have been using that whole time. And it really isn't until 2017, 2018. And in fact, I think Zoltzman was the first one who told me about it.
Oh, really?
And I was like, wait a minute, I'm working for these people. You just do the odd article. How do you know about this? And he sort of, and he, I think he also a bit like what you and I do and what Carter Kaye and everything, we all kind of share this sort of stuff as well, because a lot of it is, you come up with an idea, but you kind of want to make sure that someone else has seen it and then can help you out with it. Or you know, I wouldn't say we peer review stuff between each other, but sometimes, you know, we will bounce ideas off each other, right? Like, you know, and, you know, Wigmore is one of the best people in the business at this. Wigmore will send me a message just going, I've got this theory. This is what it is. What do you think? And, you know, you get back to him, and you and I have done it with each other as well. And, you know, there's a real community of it, but it's very clear early on. And I always felt that, like, I love Carter Kaye, obviously, but Carter Kaye is so dogmatic with his views. And Jonas was quite dogmatic as well. And, you know, and Joe Harris was the ultimate data guy, and Dan Weston had his theories. I always felt like you were kind of the person who went where the numbers led more than everyone else, whereas a lot of other people came with either very strong data perceptions or very strong cricket perceptions. So is that a choice, or is that just the sort of person you are, or how did you sort of come about doing that sort of stuff?
Well, I hadn't thought about it this way, but the way I think about, like, doing research or, like, writing pieces is you have to know the game, and the game guides you to questions, and then you have to let the data show you what the answers are. But you also have to temper it with your own knowledge of the game, right? Because the data isn't perfect. It doesn't capture everything. So it's always good to let it talk, but you've got to let it, like, you've got to also sort of rein it in a little bit. But yeah, I hadn't thought about my own thought process like that. But yeah, I guess that's how the method is, right? You let the data answer the question for you.
Yeah. And without getting too much into your job, what is a cosmologist? And how does it help with everything else that you do in cricket?
I don't think it helps a lot except for just having knowledge of math and problem solving and like techniques of math and I guess like stats.
Yeah.
A cosmologist is someone who studies the history of the universe and the contents of the universe as a whole.
Yeah.
So what I do right now
is... Not quite as important as cricket, but close.
Yeah, close, I'd say. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So what I do right now is I'm trying to explore different theories of this thing called dark energy. And we don't know much about it, so we're trying to find more about it. So, yeah. Basically, I write code, but it's code that tries to mimic the physics of dark energy on computers and supercomputers. So, yeah.
Dark energy, you know, if you crack that, obviously, then you can understand leg spin yep. better as well.
Yes.
Okay, so we've talked about the actual piece and how it came about. Yep. So I obviously stumbled across it on your Substack. And then from there,
let me correct you here, because I sent that piece to you on a DM, on a Vim, that I thought you would like to see it.
Don't do that, because now everyone's going to DM me, expecting to become an analyst.
You can cut that out.
Yeah, we can't be telling people that I ever read my DMs. Okay, you sent it to me. Okay, I don't remember that. Yeah. I just remember reading it, and we just mentioned a bunch of other people that I think have done really, really important work within cricket in very different ways. And we're not even talking about people like, you know, Tunga from that worked with the Australian team or Nathan Lehman or Prasanna or anything, but just from people from outside. There's lots of people. That was the first time where I kind of felt like we were explaining something within cricket of how someone was actually taking wickets. And it might sound really stupid, but if you go through the history of our game, we've never really come to that sort of... So, you know, you get someone who'll say, oh, Colin Croft bowled wide on the wicket. And because he bowled wide on the wicket, it felt like the ball was always coming at you. And you and I as cricket fans can understand that. But there's a big difference between that and decoding how Colin Croft specifically got his wickets from that situation. And I think... Even when we don't always have the Hawkeye data now, I think I look at these things a lot more. And it wasn't just your work as well. You know, I follow a couple of basketball scouts, Sam Fassini and John Hollinger. And like, I remember having a chat with Sam Fassini about one of the basketballers. And he was explaining to me, I think it was an Australian basketballer, Thon Maker, I think it was. And he was explaining to me how this guy was 7 foot tall and he could shoot. So everyone was like, he has to go in the NBA. But what Sam was saying is, he had no, I think it was hip flexibility. So he doesn't have the ability to go sideways. And in basketball, if you can't go sideways, right, you're a very limited player because you can't defend anyone because they can go around you.
Yeah.
And he was going through all the different things. And I was like, And I had sort of got into that a little bit as well, like looking at bowling, like trying to deconstruct Saqib Mahmood. Who's the other one? And Matthew Potts. There's a few England bowlers that I started to do the same, just exploring it myself. And then the Akshar piece sort of comes off that. And I was obviously very fascinated with Akshar Patel. And then and that's when you start to put it together. So I feel like it's a really seminal piece in understanding cricket. Like, it's not going to be remembered that way because that's not how cricket media does things. And I'm sure there'll be a Mark Nicholas piece or a Harsha Bogley piece that people will talk about more. But I think it's a seminal piece in that I think it changes the way that we think about how someone gets wickets. And you know that, you know, and it's something that for me personally, I think it has changed my work a little bit from trying to work out what the anomalies are to actually then trying to work out why the anomaly exists, right?
Yeah, I think the long and short of it is that it's a new prism into the game, right?
Yeah.
And often Hawkeye data only confirms what the obvious cliches are, but it's very satisfying to see a rigorous sort of data backed. You know, window into it that I know, you know, like a good length is a good length, right? But what exactly is a good length? Like a good length is 6 to 8 meters from the stumps. Why is it a good length and so on? So for the first time, we have public data access, which can really throw light on the game like that, which we haven't had before. We've had cliches, we've had vibes, but we've not had data that really shows where the ball goes. And, you know, that's new. And I think my piece was the first public piece using that data.
Yeah, think it was the first public piece that kind of... Also, I'm sure other people had written little things before, but it was the first one that decoded someone to a point at which afterwards you understood why Akshar Patel took wickets. And so I'm sure other people had used the Hawkeye data before, and obviously CricViz had as well. But there was a big difference between that and what you had done, which is that next level. But also, like, it's a really interesting thing. What the Hawkeye information allows us to do is, you talk about the good length being 6 to 8 meters, but we know that in the last 4 or 5 years, bowlers have changed that to 5 to 7 meters, right? And we can look at that. We can look at a game, and, you know, I remember me and Mark Nicholas being on TalkSport together at one stage, and I said, bowlers are bowling fuller now. And he was like, yeah, I feel that too. And I went, yeah, well, it's not that just we feel it. We can tell it. We can look at it now, and we can see that these bowlers. And, you know, I think off the back of what you did, I'd also, and I can't remember if it was before or after that, but I did something on Ishant Sharma, moving his lengths up.
Length a little fuller. Yeah,
and bowling fuller at the same time. And again, it comes back from that same thing of, we now have the ability to match our view of the game with everything else and go, well, Ishant Sharma basically spent a whole career bowling too short, and now he bowls fuller and he is much more dangerous and everything else. So, okay. So I make a video on your piece, and also we get you in for the podcast. So which one of those does Rahul Dravid find you off? Is the first,
I think, the video reached him from somewhere.
Okay.
I think he also reads, but he reads Crickinfo. I don't think he read the article. I think the video reached him first from somewhere.
This is brought to you by Cricket 8. They are a new player in the game, trying to educate fans on what is really happening in cricket. We have a partnership with them where we host live watch-alongs, do podcasts, and write articles. If you want to know what is really happening with our game, visit cricket8.com. What, before we get to Rahul Dravid angle of it, what did you make of the video? Because you obviously sent me that piece, so you knew it would tickle me. I don't think you knew it would tickle me that much that I would end up doing it. But I then got quite obsessed with it. And, you know, I remember going through, this was before I had access to MV Play as well. But I literally went through shot by shot, right, looking at every left arm finger spinner and how they line up and everything. And I tried to add to it. I didn't want to just recreate your piece in a video. I really wanted to go to another level altogether. But I was also a bit worried you were just going to go, well, I did all this work and now you've made a video from it.
I was pretty happy with the video. Like, I don't think I ever thought that, because I think the intent was always clear, right? Like you were representing my work in a video form and adding your own thing. So I don't think I thought of it that way. And I think that, you know, explaining these things on audio and video is always easier and always better in terms of communicating these things compared to just reading. So I think it worked, right?
How does Rahul Dravid reach out to you? Like, I know how he would reach out to me, but we worked together for years.
Yeah.
So I should say, I didn't know at that stage that Rahul Dravid was watching my videos, right? Like, not that...
Yeah.
I don't want to say this in a weird way. I hadn't really thought about whether he would watch my videos or not, right?
Yeah.
But how does he reach out to you? Because I know he was very interested. So me and Rahul Dravid had a conversation when he was coaching India A and he was in Beckenham. And he was sort of saying to me, Jared, I'm having this trouble. Like, I'm coaching India A in the under-19 side and everything. He said, but every time I talk to an analyst, they're all just specialists in T20 cricket. And, you know, and I was sort of trying to help him to find, you know, people that might be able to do other stuff and everything else. But, it was quite clearly something on his mind that he was looking for someone like you before that. But how specifically does he reach out? And did you think it was real, or did you think it was, did you think it was a friend pranking you?
I thought it was a prank. I got an email and it was exceptionally polite, as he is. And this was in the morning, and I checked my phone and I let out a volley of abuse first because I can't believe it. And then I think it's a prank. And so he says he got my contact from Crickinfo. So then I contact Rajesh at Crickinfo and I confirm with him. And he'd indeed got my contact from there. And then we set up a Zoom call, I think, 2 days later. And then we talked about it. And the initial sort of tenor of the conversation was that I'm interested in what you do. He didn't know whether I was employed with the team or not. He thought I was working with the team, you know. So he just wanted to get in touch and talk to me about what I do and how I look, you know. So what he initially said was something along the lines of, I'm interested in how you look at the game. So that was promising to me, because then 5 minutes after the first time I read the email, I remembered that he's also the coach of the Indian team. Initially, it was Rahul Dravid, oh God.
Yeah.
And then I remember that he's the coach of the Indian team. So maybe he's looking for something like that. Right. And then we had a nice chat. I was very nervous. We had a nice chat. He was very nice. And we sort of decided to keep in touch and sort of explored how I look at the game. I told him that I wasn't with the team and I'm a student and I'm, you know, like, yeah. So, yeah. So we kept on talking on Zoom, I think. And initially, I think he wanted me to look at T20, but specifically using tracking data.
Mm.
And, you know, like just leveraging tracking data to understand bowlers and batters better, which I don't think they were doing that much when I joined. So that's what he wanted to change first up. And he wanted to sort of get me in.
I mean, I know him well enough. I wouldn't say we're like close friends or anything, but I know him well enough. I've always found him a very curious person.
He's very curious. Yeah.
And that's not usual. Like a lot of cricketers.
That's not usual. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not
usual. And yeah. So that's always been my thing of like, even when I've brought up random things, you know, I'll just be talking, you know, Crick Info, we'll be talking random things and be like, sorry, what's this? You know, can you explain this to me? So I'm not surprised at that. So at what stage does that sort of, does that go from a vague conversation to, I think I can use you within the Indian setup?
I was always gunning for that. So when we started talking, I was always looking for an in there. Because I could help them. I wanted to help them as a fan of the Indian team, as a fan of Rahul Dravid. And I think pretty much 1 or 2 months into it, we had sort of formalized the plan of getting me on as a formal sort of consultant analyst.
Yep.
And like getting me access to some stuff that I could use. So I think the plan was always that. And it sort of took a couple of months for the machinery to work and for me to get on formally.
I always find that's always been the trickiest thing for me. And especially, I think it's when you come from the journalism background, but there's also, there's pre-existing analysts. And I don't mean this in a bad way, but like when I worked for Melbourne Stars, they wouldn't even give me access to video. And I was like, well, what?
Yeah.
Like I need access to all the information. Otherwise you're hiring someone and paying me a lot of money and I don't have access to that. And that's happened a few times before. And it also partly comes from the fact that you and I have a profile outside of everything else,
right.
But also we're not employees, we're contractors.
Yeah.
And so there's a middle ground there, and then we're in the media. So there's a worry. So that's always been one of my bigger things is I will be brought in to an environment, but not always given all the information. Was that tough or was that easier in this one?
I think the BCCI was quite flexible and helpful with this. And once we got past the initial sort of phase of knowing me, because they're also quite wary of outsiders, right?
Mm-hmm.
So once they got past the phase of getting to know me, I think they were pretty nice about it. And I got access to pretty much what I needed. There were things that I compiled on my own, which I shouldn't have had to do. But the core data that I needed for my work was supplied by them, and I was happy with what they did.
What year does this all start?
2022. 2022, I get the email in April. And then, so then what happened is that they came to Florida for the T20s, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we went there to meet them. And that's when he sort of talked to me and met me and he started trusting me because I could have been anyone, right?
Yeah.
So we met the team. So we met the management in Florida. And that's when they started getting me on board. And I think 1 month after that, I got the formal thing from BCCI and began my job.
You don't tell anyone. I know, right? And I know some of your other friends knew. And is that they don't want you to say, Raul doesn't want you to say, you don't want to say, why is it not made public? Because we all know who Nathan Lehman is and Freddie Wild is and everything else.
It was a combination of things. I think the profile of the job is very high risk and high visibility. And it's always good to cut out the noise.
Yeah.
And so that I think was a primary consideration behind not letting anyone know, because it's a highly sensitive job.
You were involved in that. You were happy with that. That wasn't something that was done against your will.
No. So we were all on board with that because I have a public personality, right? Like I'm semi-public on Twitter. So if people knew, that would lead to noise, that would lead to information coming in or possibly going out, or, you know, like people asking me things, people pestering me for things. And we didn't want that, right? So it was always in the best interest of the team and the management and myself to keep it secret.
It's really interesting. So I've done that a few times as well before, partly because I remember when I was with Cricket Scotland, there was this weird situation that happened where they qualified for the World Cup and TalkSport wanted to interview me because I was part of TalkSport's team, right?
Right.
And Cricket Scotland were really upset that I had been asked on and not one of their players. And I said, no, that's fine. We'll get two interviews then because you allow me to go on and we'll get Kyle on or whoever else wants to come on as well. Like it's double. And they were like, no, you can't do it. And I was like, it's kind of a big deal for TalkSport as well. And it'll be on their main channel, right?
Yeah.
But I also understand the other side of it, right? Like, you know, I don't think it was public that I was working with Melbourne Stars when I worked with Melbourne. I could be wrong. I can't remember that one. Mm-hmm. But I've done lots of work with teams that you know, that hasn't been made public or that they've asked me not to do it. And it's a really interesting one. But I also do understand it because you don't really want the analyst to be the story or the star. Yeah. And also, if you are a person who's using social media a lot, you know, and you're not an employee, right? If you're just contracted, which is a slightly different situation, it brings about other complications. So I get that. But it's also quite hard for you because you're doing the coolest thing. This might be the coolest job you ever had. I'm sorry. Yeah, you might.
Yeah, it is. It is definitely.
You might solve dark matter and you might invent a time machine. I don't really understand what you're doing. But let's say you invent a time machine. That's the only way you could do something cooler.
Yes, I agree with that. And it was tough on me at times. I won't lie because obviously, like you said, it's a very cool job and you like to sort of tell people, right? But it was for the best and I kind of understood.
I would laugh every time you said a tweet because I knew who you were. It was so funny to me from the outside.
Yeah. So during that period, I also stopped tweeting about Indian cricket at all.
Yeah.
Except for praising a few performances here and there. Like, you know, I stopped writing for Cricinfo and I stopped generally engaging on Twitter with respect to cricket because I had to be quiet, right? I was in the system now. I had know-how of what was going on. I had knowledge of, you know, like players and selection and stuff going on. So it wouldn't have been right for me to comment on anything, you know.
Mm.
So I was happy with that.
And you're basically starting at the top, right? Like if you think about my progression, you know, I did Melbourne Stars, St. Lucia Stars, you know, Scotland, as I said, a few other teams for other various things that I've been involved with. And I kind of got to start with leagues and franchises that weren't all that important and no one cared about and everything else. It must have been quite full on to suddenly realize that you're playing with a team which is a billion people give a shit about.
It's a highly scary place to be in. Because although you're not playing, right, you're not the captain, you're not a player, you're not the coach, right, and you're in the background, but you're still responsible for a team that is being watched by millions of people, like, you know, and their actions are scrutinized every single day. And it's a high profile team, right? So it is scary. I was quite nervous in the beginning because I didn't know what exactly my role was and I was starting. But yeah, I think the team management was quite welcoming, quite open with it. And sort of that sort of eased the transition for me. And I never felt like we were doing something too big, right? It was all like pretty normal and chill.
Mm. And you talked before about being the shadow analyst. That's the other interesting thing. You know, we know who Prasanna is and we know who Nathan Lehman is and, you know, Freddie Wild and these sorts of people. And not that we know every team analyst, but, you know, I was watching West Indies England the other day and someone asked me who was sitting next to Truscothic and I was like, oh, that's Freddie Wild. Like, you know, they're right there in front of the camera. You weren't in the dugout. And you didn't travel with the team. And you just said you didn't even talk to your man, Akshar Patel, who you owe.
I didn't talk to any players except for Rohit and Ashwin.
Well, you owe Akshar Patel a dinner. So I think actually that's on
he
you.
He owes me a dinner.
Well, you owe each other a dinner, maybe. Yeah, yeah. why were you kept away from the playing group so much?
So, you know this better than I do. The way you communicate information to players versus someone who's a researcher and versus someone who's a researcher who talks about, you know, cricket in terms of math and numbers is very different.
Mm.
And that sort of transition takes time and takes experience and takes trust.
Yeah.
Now to bring someone in from the outside of the system and to prop them into the team like that and telling people that he is this guy who does tracking numbers and he'll build some metrics and he'll tell you your impact and so on, is not a very wise strategy. So I think the wise thing to do was, which we did, was to keep a layer between the players and me, where my ideas and my criticism of the players or my sort of, you know, like research into the players would go to the coaches. And they would decide what to do with that. And that's the best way to work, I think, because you don't want to muddle the players with numbers or with research or with, you know, these things. So I think...
I mean, I get that. I mean, I do think sometimes, and it's hard, and it probably wouldn't have come as naturally to you as it would to someone like me who spent 10 or 15 years hanging around with players and coaches. But I actually felt that, and also my job is very different to your job. My job is literally explaining complex things to people who don't understand it necessarily. Yeah. So it is very, very different. But I did find that working with players, because players, a lot of players are going to be future coaches anyway, if you know what I mean.
Right. Yeah.
And so they kind of sometimes know the right questions, but you have to be aware of which players don't need any numbers. You also have to be aware of how you talk to players. So one of my big things was, and I kind of coached a few of the Scottish players up on this, is when I say the word average, right, you are going to think that means bad. But actually, if you're an average player, it means you're an above average player, because the players who are below average haven't even got into the game. Right. And so I always say average in cricket is actually the top 30% of players, because the other 70% are churning through. And I said, you need to understand that. But also from that, you get that. So I understand why you did it. And I also think it would have been very tough for you to start at that level. But I do think there is an element that you can, if you have the skill sets, be very handy in the other side of it. But what I really want to ask you is, why Ashwin and Rohit then? I mean, Rohit makes more sense because he's the captain, so he's going to want to not know some numbers. But why Ashwin? Just because he's a nerd? Did you just do it because he's a fellow nerd?
One of the reasons was that, but also because I wrote an article on him and he'd read it. And when I first met Rahul Bhai in Florida, we'd been meeting for 3 or 4 days. And then I told him that, can I just talk to Ashwin?
Yeah.
And I guess he was comfortable letting Ashwin know that I was doing some data work with the team, right? So we talked for a bit at that point in time. And I know, so after the World Cup final, Ashwin had a live on his YouTube and he mentioned me, not by name, but he knew about me throughout.
Yeah.
And he used to be in the meeting sometimes and... like he's also talked to me like on those. Rohit is obvious because Rohit came to a couple of meetings where I was there. So he knew me well compared to the other players. But those are the other, those are the only two players who knew about me. At the end, when we were stuck in Barbados at the hotel with the storm, we were at the dinner. And at the end of the dinner, Virat was sitting with us. And my mouth was completely dry because I was nervous. And so at the end of the dinner, Rahul Bhai told him that, you know, he's from Delhi and he's working, you know, with data and that's all.
So Virat Kohli didn't know who you were until you'd won a World Cup.
No.
That's great. I love that.
He'd seen me once or twice, but he hadn't really.
I want to take it back a step here then.
Yeah.
What is it like to be an Indian fan who ends up as the analyst and loses 2 World Cups? This is brought to you by Cricket 8, the new home of cricket intelligence.
I mean, it's different from being a fan, right? Being a fan because you know the internal workings, you know the processes, you know. So the biggest difference is that as a fan on the outside, you think about things and you talk about things without knowing what's happening inside the team, right? And as someone who's inside the team, you know that if there is a decision that's made that looks wonky, there are reasons behind it. There are 15,000 reasons behind it that have gone into making this decision.
Yeah.
So that perspective completely changes. And also, like, once you start analyzing the game, things like, you know, losing the World Cup final, you learn to sort of accept it because you understand what happened. And you learn to sort of move on because the players are also moving on, right? Like, I cried for a couple of days after the World Cup final. And I met Rohit in New York after that, before the next World Cup. And we talked about that. And you could see the hurt in his eyes, but you know that they've moved on because these guys are playing the game, right?
They don't have an option. The difference between them and you is they're used to losing. And that was I think that was the first thing. I can't remember if it was Brad Hodge or Mitchell McClenaghan who said he could tell that I was like too low and too high. Yeah. And he said, you're not used to winning and losing and we are. Yeah. We do it on a daily basis. And he said, so if you're in this situation and you see some of us mucking around, you might be like, oh, how could you do that? We lost 2 games in a row. It's like, we might have lost 8 games in a row, yeah, right? And then another time we might have won 9 games in a row and been depressed. Like,
and that, you sort of learn that.
Yeah.
You sort of learn that when you get inside the team, right? You you learn to think of wins and losses as not earth-shattering, right?
Exactly.
And you understand the sort of goings-on behind them. So you learn to sort of accept both better than a fan.
No, I agree. And then yeah, the other thing as an analyst I found really interesting is the powerlessness that you have, where you do so much work and you get so much right, and then the pitch doesn't play the way that you need it to, yeah, or the players don't listen, or they do everything right and there's a drop catch. And, you know, you and I both know what it's like to lose a game that everyone thought you were going to win. Like, mine doesn't matter as much because it was only the Melbourne Stars. But to me, emotionally, it mattered so much at that time, because
right,
I was watching the Melbourne Stars implement my plan step by step by step. And there was one part of my plan that they hadn't gone with. And in the second innings, when we were massively ahead in the game and Renegades were like 10-1 to win that game,
yeah,
the part of the plan that I had said they were wrong for unraveled and we lost the game. And it's like, I remember messaging Dan Bredig and my cousin Joel and literally saying to them, did you see that wicket? Literally, that's what I told them to do. And it went bang, bang, bang. And we got all the way to, and then the Stars started batting too slow because of the Evan Goldbus effect, which, you know, you and I have chatted about before. And it's like, I could see it unfurling in the other way. There's nothing I could do, right? Because when there's a difference between being the analyst like Prasanna or Freddie Wild, or, and you're there and you can ring a bell and say everyone, I can't even call the team. Right, because I'm remote and they don't have their mobile phones on them for match fixing. Right. There's no way I can actually get that match. That level of powerlessness is so intense. And you're doing it for the team you love in a World Cup.
Yeah, so one of the things that I understood very early on, and like Rahul Bhai was very good with sort of explaining this, that, you know, they are the players. They have to go on the field and play. Yeah. So once the match begins, your role is limited, even as a coach, right?
Yeah.
And you have to accept that. You are not playing the game. You are just trying to help them. The other thing is this sort of emotional attachment to the team, right? This really got to me before the ODI World Cup. And after that, I decided that
Interject, I remember talking to you after the T20 World Cup when they went out in Adelaide. You know, and we I don't think we were talking on the phone. We were just chatting over DM.
Yeah.
But you were really down. And you were really frustrated. And I was like, oh, God, I've been there. Like, I know exactly what he's going through. But I don't think we talked as much after the World Cup because I didn't want to send you a message because I was like, I don't even know how I would go through a second one of those in a row.
No, so before the World Cup, I understood that, you know, like, I have to cut myself off from this.
Yeah.
So I would send in my research one day before each game or 2 days before each game and then just shut down and sleep and not watch the game until I woke up. So when I woke up, these matches were like almost half done.
Yeah.
So when I woke up in Canada. Right? Yeah. So I was in Canada.
Canada.
And so like when I woke up,
America of the North.
So they were half done. And fortunately, 10 out of those 11 games, we were in a good position when I woke up.
Yeah.
When I woke up for the final, we were like 154 or something. And I was like, oh shit, we're done. But yeah, I learned during that World Cup that you have to let go.
Yeah.
You've done your job 2 days before the game. You sent them a big deck of slides and it's up to them to take them or not take them.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, like 70% of the time they wouldn't take the plans because of whatever reasons there might be. Not my call, right?
Mm.
But 30% of the times they took the plan and you could see it on TV and that's like that kind of satisfaction is, you know, yeah, you can't compare that to anything. This involves, by the way, the wicket of Heinrich Klassen in the final.
Don't go ahead. I want to hear about that. But I think that for me is the one thing even as a writer, I don't think I've ever been able to fully. I tried a piece for someone, and I can't remember who it was because they wanted me to write about this one. That's the one thing that I don't know how to fully explain to someone. And I've had it with Crick Info, and I've had it with TalkSport, and I've had it being an analyst and all these different things. But like, when you are watching a cricket game and something is happening because you are involved, when you grow up as someone who, like us, who is not great cricketers, like we were never supposed to be impacting an international game, a franchise game, any kind of game, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And to be able to watch that happen in real time and be like, oh my God, they're following my plan exactly. And this thing has worked is a rush of which it's I don't think I ever want to be a normal analyst again. I don't think it's my best skill set. With working with teams, I think I'm more useful sort of in other roles within teams. But that is such an incredible rush, and it never goes away, no matter how long you've been doing the job. Or, you know, if sometimes a test team will do something differently, and I'll get a DM from someone going, "We took that from you," and I'm just "I can't." Yeah. It's so incredible. And for you to be able to do that, I don't think that's something that we can fully explain to a human who hasn't done it.
I mean, that, and the other satisfaction is that, so I'm a hobbyist, right? I'm not an expert. I'm not a cricketer, right? And for someone of the stature of Rohit Sharma or Rahul Dravid to talk to me like an equal and take my words and use them and find them useful is the kind of satisfaction that I can never get from anything else, right? It tells you that you sort of belong there and you're not just talking nonsense for Twitter or for, like, you know, it's actually useful stuff that a team that is extremely high profile is using and finding useful. And that is unparalleled, I think.
No, I agree. Yeah. See, the difference for me is by the time I got into a team, I was already at that level. Do you know what I mean? Like, I had already worked with people, so it wasn't quite the same. But I get that. I remember that as a cricket writer. But the first time you were in a conversation with someone, you really... I remember having a conversation randomly with Wasim Akram, where it wasn't even a conversation we were having together, but we were both watching something on TV. And I pointed something out, not sort of knowing he was at the next table. And then he added onto it. And next thing you know, we're in this conversation. And I was just like, he has no idea that I bowl absolute filth leg spin and can't bat. He's going on this conversation and we're seeing this thing that, you know, and so I completely get that. All right. You've lost 2 World Cups at this stage. I don't want to be the person that points out that you've lost more World Cups than you've won, but what is it like when it finally comes together? And I would say also the team probably played a little bit more like you would want them to play in the last World Cup than perhaps they did in some of the others as well. So there's a professional pride there. But what is it like being the person who gets... Because that's one thing I can't relate to. Like, you know, getting Scotland to a World Cup was a really satisfying thing, but Scotland probably should have made it with or without me, right? And it's not winning a World Cup. You've grown up watching this team. They are your team. They win the World Cup. How do you feel? And let's start with the Heinrich Klaassen wicket, because you're now taking full credit for that, I noticed.
So
Andy had nothing to do with that wicket.
No, he had everything to do with that. I had maybe 0.5%. But yeah, so 15 overs into the second innings, my wife and I are sitting in the stands and we are deflated completely because this is gone, right? And so we discussed this sort of delivery right before that match. So on the evening of that match, we had discussed sort of the possibility of maybe bowling a wide slower ball because he doesn't move his feet too much and so on, right? And so the break happens and then I think Pant feigns an injury and then Hardik comes in and suddenly, you know, that ball is bowled and he gets out. And that sort of, you know, like moves on to the Bumrah over and then the Arzeep over. And then, so when we win, we are sobbing. I am sobbing for the next 10 minutes. Because it's not just me, right? I am a very small part of this machine. And the difference is that as someone who's been inside, you know and you've seen how many parts this machine has. Right from the analyst Hari to Rahul Bhai to Vikram Bhai to Rohit, you know how much it means to everyone. And you know that the project has been on for the past 2.5 years since Rahul Bhai took over. This project of batting like a T20 team, this project of looking at how to hit balls better, right from there to winning the World Cup, which took a bit of luck as well, right? So all these things have to come together. And you realize that you played a very small part. Maybe you didn't play a very significant part, but you were part of that. And the feeling that you were part of something that's so big and that's so moving in one direction is, again, like satisfaction comparable to nothing, right? So as Rahul Bhai told me that day, had Surya's boots been a little bigger, we would not have become a bad team suddenly, right? But this is how things work, things work this way in cricket and everything had to come together for us to win. And I'm proud that as part of that team management, we sort of made the right moves in order to play the game the right way And that sort of paid off, right? And yeah, like, I think it's a bigger achievement than my PhD. Although it's not my achievement. Again, like, my contribution was maybe 1%. I'm going to ask,
do you consider yourself a World Cup winner now?
No.
Because I mean, think you are. I think that's wrong.
And I mean, yeah.
I don't just mean you. I mean, the people who do the throwdowns and, you know, the team manager and everything. It's, these things aren't won individually. Like, just by the players. The players have to be put in the right position by, and it is a machine. It's a machine, right?
It's a machine, right? Yeah.
And so, like, you know, I'm not saying you should be up on the dais getting a medal. It would have been nice, but yeah, it, you know, all the assistant coaches and everything else. I feel like that's what you guys all achieve. I'll tell you how I felt. I was sitting there, and I really wanted South Africa to win. Just because I just want South Africa to win. I just don't want, right. You know me, I just want the narrative to move on.
Right.
Anything else. But when you guys won, I was just so happy for you and Rahul Dravid, right? Because two people I know how much, and I think you know this, but what, a month before the World Cup, Rahul Dravid spent 2 hours talking to me for my book. When he, you know, he did it as a personal favor, right? Yeah. And like, and it was funny, he was so upbeat and so great talking about the book, right? And then at the end, I was like, oh, thanks, mate. I'll talk to you soon. Good luck at the World Cup. And he's like, no. And he made me go through quite viciously what I thought was wrong. And you know that I'd be quite, you know, a critical of the way that India had played T20 cricket specifically. And, you know, and he told me what some of the reasons why I was wrong and everything. But he looked defeated, right? He just looked tired. And it was because it's like, it, as you said, it's a 2.5 year project. And you all played your part. And he, you know, and he was coming in going, this is the one that has to work, because he was obviously looking at leaving that position. And I don't think he wanted to leave without that one big win.
Yeah.
So, and there was a lot of pressure on him. I mean, you and I both know the amount of people online that were saying, how could a guy who was no good at T20 cricket be the coach and all that sort of nonsense?
So let me, you know, take this moment to make the point that he is perhaps the most radical cricketer I've met in terms of thinking about T20. He was the most forward-thinking and most radical. And this narrative that people have online that, you know, he's a test cricketer, how would he understand this format, is all bullshit. Because from day one, he had the right idea about the format. And he understood the game at a level which is very rare. I mean, I had to remind myself that, you know, this is one of the best cricketers of all time that you're talking to. Because sometimes he'd just blow me away, right? And I had to remind myself that, yes, this is Rahul Dravid indeed. And he just understood all the formats that well, right? And he had the right idea from the get-go. So, yeah, this whole narrative of him not understanding white ball cricket is all nonsense.
No, of course. Like, but we know that. Yeah, but if they'd not, as you said, well, as Rahul said, if that shoe had been a little bit bigger, I made a whole video about it. Like, that's what it comes to. The Indian team wouldn't have been any worse. And you and I would have known that. But that is not what the narrative would have been.
Right.
You've come through all this now. How? I mean, you've now peaked as a human being. Everything from here on in your life is going to be worse. You're basically like a player at this stage. You can never do anything better than what you've done. But what's the thing that sticks with you the most from all of this experience?
Beyond the World Cup win, you mean?
Just whatever. I mean, you tell me.
I mean, so the fact that we sort of made a management group where we sort of changed the culture of within the team of really looking at the data for everything, right? And the good thing is that with Rohit and Rahul Bhai, we had the right balance of data versus vibes because they understand cricket, right? So this whole process of changing how we look at the game for me, for the players, for the coaches, was something transformative. And it's so this is what goes beyond the World Cup win. When you change a culture, I don't know where it went after that. I'm not sure if it continued, but when you change the base culture of a team, right, and you start looking at, you know, like the game in a different way, I think that's the biggest contribution of me as a part of that team beyond the World Cup, right? So the World Cup was won by the players, but just the fact that we had a commitment to being the most knowledgeable team management out there. We had a commitment to leveraging all the data we could use. Like, I could tell you that, you know, like 10 to 12 meter balls faster than 135, what angles are they hit at, and who hits them the best, and who plays the pull shot the best on that. So we had a commitment to just knowing everything we could. And that, I think, makes me proud that we did that throughout the 2.5 years or 2 years I was there.
I'd like to thank you very much for coming on the podcast. And I have noticed that I haven't been paid my 10% agent's fee for getting that job. But I'm sure that check's in the mail and it'll be here anytime soon. But thank you very much for coming on. And look forward to your next article, which will end up with you working for the Papua New Guinea team.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. It was great fun.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vasudevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make any content, Minbo Pro is the tool for you. Take your long format content and cut it and slice it for social media. This AI-inspired weapon will turn your one piece of work into so many clips. Try Minbo.pro now.